Hi, everyone. I only made about 30 copies of the handouts, and I see that there's more than 30 of you here. So if you would like a copy of the handouts, Randy Cinco, who's our biostatistician for our project and co-author, is passing them out. So raise your hand if you'd like a copy. I'd first of all like to start off by also saying there's an error on the title of the handout, but the correct title is up here. I also like to recognize some of my co-authors and some of my colleagues who are in the room. Randy Cinco, who is our biostatistician and who is passing out the handouts. Gloria Palmasano, who is our Reach Detroit project manager. I know I saw Ricardo Guzman earlier. He's executive director of CHAS Clinic in Southwest Detroit. And I saw Karen Tabb, who is an intern with Reach Detroit. Karen, you here? Okay. In addition to those present, several other people I'd like to acknowledge, Anne-Marie Roslin, Edie Kiefer, who's not here, Mike Anderson, who is our Family Health Advocate Supervisor, as well as Michelle Heisler. A lot of you are familiar with health disparities and probably know about the unequal treatment book. I'm just going to present a few slides that sort of highlight the problem of health disparities. Oh, and there's Rachel Dombrowski, who is also an intern with Reach. A little bit of background. As you know, incidences of diabetes are higher among people of color, particularly among African American and Latinos. Higher rates of diabetes complications are also evident, as well as barriers in terms of diabetes self-management. Lower socioeconomic status, which leads to disproportionate levels of healthcare utilization, as well as health insurance. As well as higher rates of discrimination, which have been documented by previous speakers. This is also from the Unequal Treatment book, but it basically shows you that the difference in quality of healthcare, which goes above and beyond clinical appropriateness and need, as well as patient preferences. These get manifested in terms of the utilization procedures among people of color compared to whites. I just want to highlight the first one, which looks at angioplasty and shows that African Americans have about half the rate of angioplasties as whites. But then if you go down to amputation of all or part of limbs, as you can see, have over 3.5 times the number of amputations. In the state of Michigan, which is where I'm from, we also have issues with diabetes, particularly among populations of color, high rates among African Americans and Latinos again, and that populations of color also suffer high incidences of chronic disease, regardless of socioeconomic status, education, as well as healthcare coverage. Taking a more of a socio-ecological approach, what we see is that there are various sources of disparities in healthcare, at the patient level, at the provider level, and at the health system level. Our project, Reach Detroit, really aims to try to eliminate these disparities by taking a very comprehensive approach to diabetes. We were originally funded by the CDC through the Reach 2010 initiative. We had a one-year planning grant from which we built our community coalition, as well as our community action plan. We use CBPR, community-based participatory research principles, to guide all of our research. Here's some of our Reach Detroit partners, a number of community-based organizations, Akibalan Village, CHAS, Friends of Parkside, local and state health departments in Michigan, major health systems, including the Henry Ford System, as well as research centers, including Southeast Diabetes Outreach Network and the University of Michigan School of Public Health, Medicine, and Social Work. Our central coordinating agency and our home base, this is the heart of where our work lies, is at CHAS Center, which is in Southwest Detroit. Here's a picture. We're going to build a new building, though, so that picture's going to be old soon. Here's a sort of a complicated slide that shows our community action plan. I just want to point out that our intervention goes beyond just individual level. We're going to be presenting on the family intervention today, but we also have community level interventions that include exercise and dance classes, healthy eating classes. We work in health systems providing provider education around cultural competency. We do support groups in the community. So we have a very comprehensive approach to not only serving people, but also building the resources within the community. Like I said, we're going to talk about the family intervention today, which really focuses on individuals and families. I'm the team leader of the family intervention, and the goals of the family intervention are, one, to improve the self-management care of people with diabetes, to increase people's healthy eating and physical activities, to enhance the family-provider relationship, to increase access to community resources, and to increase healthcare consumer skills. I always think I should take that out, and then I forget. Because it never comes up, you know, when you're going through it. But we accomplish that, all of that, through a community health worker approach. We call our community health workers family health advocates. These are members of our target communities, people who share cultural beliefs and values, share social and ethnic characteristics. They help to eliminate communication barriers between health systems and the community. They act as role models for change themselves. Many of our family health advocates also had diabetes or have family members with diabetes. And they also do a lot of dissemination of information. They educate families. They do case management. They do a number of things. Here's a picture of our staff. As you can see, we work with both African American and Latino communities. The family health advocates do a number of things beyond the things that I've told you. They go through pretty darn extensive training. They're trained in diabetes education, patient empowerment techniques, which guide a lot of our work, group facilitation skills. As part of the intervention, they do home visits, one-on-one visits with the family, setting behavioral goals, providing social support, getting access to resources. They go on a clinic visit with the patients. They accompany clients to the provider, to their provider's office. They help them to navigate the healthcare system. And they do a culturally tailored diabetes self-management class known as Journey to Health, or the Spanish El Camino a la Salud. Here's the design of our intervention here. We actually have gone through two cohorts, and I'm going to be presenting the data from our second cohort. But as I said before, we started off with a planning year. And at that time, when we first went through our process, we didn't use a randomized procedure. You know, we didn't want to just go into the community and start randomizing people. We didn't have the legitimacy or the respect or the trust of the community to go out and do that. So we started off with a community sample of about 180 individuals, one group, pre-post-test design. The second phase, which is the current phase, arose from the real positive outcomes that we got from cohort one. We saw some real change in people, and our family health advocates were really excited about what we were doing. Our partners were very excited about what we were doing, and we really wanted to show that our intervention was successful, was effective. We went through our steering committee, and we approved a randomization process that included a delayed intervention control group. That is, individuals received the full intervention after 6 months of being on a waiting list, essentially. During the time that they were on the waiting list, though, I will say, though, and this will become important later, they did receive access to all of our community-level interventions, the dance classes, the healthy eating demonstrations, all of those things that I had mentioned earlier. And we also gave them invitations to those things because they were free and publicly available. We really couldn't withhold them from people. And we figured, you know, if some people went and some people didn't, that could screw things up, so to speak, in terms of exposure. So we really encouraged and tried to invite all people to that. But only the intervention group received the services of the family health advocate for the first 6 months. I'm not going to go through this in detail. This is just a little bit about our recruitment and randomization procedures. But we started off with looking, getting medical records and finding all eligible participants. We were able to get about 183 people to agree to participate. About 164 ended up completing the baseline interview, 135 the six-month follow-up. We recruited a few more people in the control group, thinking that those people might be more likely to withdraw. They really didn't, but we did. That was how we targeted the recruitment. And we stratified by race and healthcare site so that we could assure that we got balance in both arms of the intervention. Our research questions. What we wanted to do was we wanted to improve health indicators for the intervention group compared to the delayed group. Hemoglobin A1C was our major outcome, as well as cholesterol and blood pressure. We also wanted to improve the knowledge of diabetes self-management and self-management behaviors. We hope to have improved and increased people's knowledge and increased their consumption of fruit and vegetables and increased their physical activity. We also wanted to improve their psychological distress, which was associated with having diabetes, and we measured that using the problem area and diabetes scale. Here's a little bit more. We actually collected the physiological outcomes through medical charts, so we didn't collect that data directly. Here are the questions that we used for the knowledge of diabetes management. For fruit and vegetable consumption, we used mean number of servings of fruit and vegetable, servings per week of fried and fatty foods, servings per week of soda pop and fruit-flavored drinks. And for physical activity, engaging in at least moderate levels of physical activity, 30 minutes a day for at least 5 days a week. And these are all related to ADA guidelines. Again, the problem areas in diabetes was the scale we used for measuring psychological distress. The baseline characteristics, I'm showing you this primarily to show you that our randomization worked. For most of the demographic measures that we had hoped to randomly distribute between the two arms, we were pretty successful in doing so. The only significant difference was in age, so all of our analyses are age adjusted. I won't go over this in too much detail except to say that we used repeated measures modeled. Again, we adjusted for age. We used generalized estimating equation for binary variables, linear mixed models for ordinal and continuous variables, and of course we used SAS. In terms of the first slide here, what you see is the difference between the treatment and the control groups. As you can see at baseline, A1C levels were pretty similar for both groups, and at 6 months you see a huge decline, a clinically significant, not a statistically significant, but a clinically significant decline. The second slide shows a treatment effect of 0.6%. This is considered to be clinically significant. Usually when you see drops in A1C of 0.5, those are considered to be clinically significant, and we see 0.6 in this case, so we're very happy. We also saw a significant difference within the intervention group, not necessarily between the intervention and control group, but within the intervention group, we saw a significant drop in A1C. Cholesterol, we see a significant decrease within the treatment group in LDL cholesterol. The difference was not significant across between the two groups, but as you can see, we got some good results. Physical activity, here was something that was a little bit unexpected. We actually saw improvements for both groups in physical activity, both the intervention as well as the control group. Same thing happened with fruit and vegetable consumption. We saw improvements for both groups, and in fact, our control group in this case actually outpaced our intervention group and was significantly consumed significantly more fruit and vegetables, or at least reported that they did. The knowledge of diabetes self-management, there was a significant improvement both between the two groups as well as within the intervention group. So we were we did a good job in terms of getting people to understand how to manage their diabetes. You see a significant difference within the treatment group in terms of decrease in psychological distress. The difference was not significant between the groups, but as you can see from the graph, we did pretty well. In summary, we really accomplished a lot with this project. We were able to develop what I consider to be a very strong community health worker model using community-based participatory research approaches. We developed a culturally and linguistically tailored replicable diabetes self-management and healthy lifestyles curriculum, which we're continuing to work on and improve. We saw a clinically significant decrease in A1C compared to the control group, statistically significant improvements in the knowledge of diabetes self-management compared to the control group, as well as statistically significant improvements in A1C, LDL, knowledge of self-management, and diabetes-specific distress within the intervention group. However, we didn't see significant differences in blood pressure, in healthy eating, or in physical activity. We didn't focus on blood pressure in our intervention, and my understanding of blood pressure is that that's a pretty complicated one. We looked at both diastolic and systolic blood pressure, and they stayed pretty constant for both groups. In terms of the lack or the unexpected findings with healthy eating and physical activity, we're really glad that everyone improved. You know, I mean, that's not a bad thing. Everybody improved in those areas. And the control group, you know, did a little bit better. We're okay with that. And one of the ways that we look at that is that everyone had access to our community level interventions. You know, everyone had access to healthy eating classes. Everyone had access to the physical activity classes. And there's no way we could have or would have wanted to withhold those things from our group. So in some ways, we see that as a healthy byproduct of our usual enhanced care sort of methodology. And it's also consistent with our CBPR principles. We did have a small sample size, and that could have accounted for some of the differences as well. We originally, this study was designed as a pilot for testing the feasibility of the randomization procedures and wasn't necessarily powered to observe statistical differences. The clinical measures were not taken directly, but were taken no more than 3 months from the interview date. For A1C, this wouldn't have made as big of a difference because that's an average of glucose over 3 to 4 months. Could have been more of a difference for some of the other variables. Three of the delayed participants crossed over in the intervention. You know, our family of health advocates came to us and they said, you know, these people need some serious help, and we, you know, ethically didn't want to withhold any services from people who they felt were critically in need, and so we did keep them in the group that they were assigned, but we did expose them to the intervention early. And then finally, we used self-reported data. Despite all of these limitations, we still got some good results, so we're happy with where we're going. So the next steps, we're actually preparing a third cohort now. We recently got funded by NIDDK to do another randomized enhanced usual care control group. This time we'll be focusing on Latinos only so that we can have enough power to do so. We're also continuing to look for funding to work with our African American communities as well. But we do want to be powered to detect 0.5% changes in A1C. We will be collecting direct measures this time of clinical measures, as well as we're going to have an improvement in our curriculum. We're also going to include a cost-effectiveness analysis, which is really important right now and really needed in the community health worker literature. And we're also working really hard on developing plans to sustain community health worker interventions through our partnership with a state task force. Thank you to all of you for coming. Thank you to our funders. Thank you to all of our REACH participants. Thank you to our REACH staff. This is how you can reach me, and I have no disclosures.
Thank you, Dr. Spencer. For those who would ask that we, if you would just leave the room quietly if you're leaving, thank you. For those of us who are interested in the presentation for Dr. Katz, are there